This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you early risers getting up with us here. We're here with you till 10 a.m., Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne, and today we double as a collective therapist for you Astro fans out there who, Seth, these games are, they were fun to watch like 5 days ago, and it's as Michael Scott from The Office would say, my, how the turntables. that's what's happened over the last 5 days. The Astros lose last night 8-2 to the Oakland A's, and Jake Odorizzi, Seth, I was, the first time through the lineup, I'm like, all right, this looks good. I can see why they're spending $11 million a year on this guy. And then by the time he was going through it the second time, I was like, why are they spending $11 million a year on this guy? It's fine. It's funny how things change real quickly like that. How are you this morning, my friend? Whoop. Seth, all right. The Astros lose last night to the Detroit Tigers. I don't know, I may have said they lost to the Oakland A's. They lose to the Detroit Tigers last night. Jake Odorizzi, not great in his first start as an Astro. So let's hear from Jake Odorizzi and Dusty Meek. Jake Odorizzi, 3 1/3 innings, 5 earned runs, and the only real winners in the whole thing were anybody who had seats in the Crawford boxes, which continue to get peppered with home runs throughout the game. Here is Jake Odorizzi on the Tigers adjusting the second time through the lineup last night.
They started laying off some close pitches, some splits that were just off or just below that I thought would have induced maybe even a check swing, something, some sliders they took a little bit. So I don't know if they just changed their approach to looking up in the zone full time, and then anything else that was, you know, unless it was on the plate for sure, it was going to be a take. You know, I'm not sure, but they started fouling balls off. Working counts, adding my pitch count up.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it went the second time through. Dusty Baker saying that looked good early, but Odorizzi couldn't sustain his stuff.
He had more hop on the ball, you know, early in the game, and he was throwing the ball up. Like I said, he had some hop on his pitches, and about the third inning, stopped hopping. And, they start popping it. And, that's the adjustments that they made. That was his first time out. You know, we were hoping he'd go, 80 pitches. But it appeared, like, when he got to about 65, 66, he didn't have the same movement on his pitches.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it's gone for the Astros this early part of the season. They're 6-5 now, but that's been sort of the theme, is that They've had to tear into the bullpen a little bit early, even in the starts that were good, even in the starts that were successful early in the season against the Oakland A's. They've had to tear into the bullpen, and it's funny because you watch these games and you find yourself watching the pitch count as much as you do the score of the game. You find yourself watching, to see and make sure that, okay, you know, Granke, the first game of this series, all right, he doesn't have his stuff, but let's at least get to the fifth or sixth inning here, and they're having to tear into the bullpen as we – What's going on, Seth?
Sorry, buddy. I had technical issues here.
No worries.
You and I, before the show, were talking about, days gone by. And, like we're not that old. And it's not like even when we were, young adults or anything, pitchers were pitching complete games all over the place. But we were going back and looking at Larry Durker, J.R. Richard.
Yeah.
Larry Durker had 20 complete games. Larry Durker had 20. J.R. Richard had 19 complete games.
In a season.
A bygone era, let's say 2017, when Justin Verlander came in his first game with the Astros, 6 innings.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Iron Man.
Wow. Was that Justin Verlander or Lance Armstrong?
Right.
That was a feat of endurance. I can't even tell. Yeah. Like, how do you even do that without doing drugs? Come on. It's getting a little absurd.
Yeah.
Odorizzi's talking afterwards about how maybe I'll call Verlander and ask for help. My four seam fastball just no. There was no magical secret to how do I keep guys from hitting my fastball in this ballpark? Maybe the first one, Badu's first one, which apparently would have been an out in 29 Major League Baseball stadiums.
Every ballpark,
the Crawford boxes.
It took place in, yes.
This is man. You know what the Crawford boxes is? You know what the Crawford boxes is, Sean?
What's that?
You met the woman of your dreams. She's beautiful. She's got an incredible personality. You marry her, and you have a really vibrant sex life, but she's also sleeping all over town with every Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Okay.
And, whichever guy. She's indiscriminate, the Crawford boxes is. She'll make you think that she loves you, but then all of a sudden, it's like the fleet just came in when the Detroit Tigers come to town. Here you go.
It is pretty wild. Like, I remember I was living here, obviously, when the ballpark opened back in 2000, and it's been interesting to watch along the way just how pitchers have adjusted to the ballpark. You know, the pitcher. This thing played like Coors Field when they first opened it up back in 2000. I remember it ruined Jose Lima. Jose Lima was a 20-game winner in 1999. They moved into – it was Enron Field back then. They moved into Enron Field, and I remember the stories of Jose Lima walking in to the ballpark to look at it when they revealed it to the team. You know, like the team all came out to see it before they opened it, and Jose Lima took one look at that porch in left field, and he was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm a fly ball pitcher. I am dead. And he was dead. His Astros career was dead on arrival. Guys have learned how to kind of pitch around it. And my guess is you look at Odorizzi last night, and he's going to go. It's not the first time he's ever pitched in Minute Maid Park, but he's going to be pitching in it on the regular now. So he's going to have to adjust a little bit.
Jose Lima was like, I'm never going to get a Mexican restaurant endorsement in this town
ever again.
This is ridiculous.
So
he had already had it. What time, let's see, when was his first year in Houston?
Like 97. His two great years were 98 and 99.
97, yeah, okay, yeah, all right, yeah. Yeah.
98 and 99 were his two really, really good seasons. But anyways, back to the
did he get wait, I need to linger on Casa Olay for a second.
Yeah,
did he get how long into his tenure did he have the Casa Olay endorsement? Like, was it an immediate thing for people that were here?
No, it was when he became actually a very, very good pitcher. You know,
okay.
he was a legendary radio character as well. Like, he would come in and do the morning show on this station quite a bit for like 4 hours. So people loved him. He was beloved in this town.
He was well. I can remember that because our first year here in 2002. He was still, I think he was still making phone appearances.
He may have been.
He was back in Detroit in 2002. Yeah.
Yep. So back to the current day Astros, Seth. They are now 6-5. Just 5 days ago, we were touting, just like 3 days ago, we were looking at the power rankings for the season so far, going, hey, look, the Astros are third. They're fifth. They're the same old Astros, just without George Springer. That's what they are. And now it's kind of it's caved in the last few days here. Their situational hitting has stunk. The Astros do this sometimes for a team with a bunch of good hitters on it. Their situational hitting has been kind of an issue. Even in their best seasons, it felt like they would have issues when they'd have swoons like they're having right now. Situational hitting was a big deal. Right now, everything's a big deal. They're losing these games 6-2 and 8-2.
You just always have to remember, you know. It's early in the season, everybody. Yeah. Right now, you're tied with the Mariners. Can the Astros beat the Mariners in the 162 game regular season? I'm guessing you're not going to have any issues.
What's your freakout level right now on a scale of 1 to 10?
My freakout level on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm concerned about the pitching. I mean, even when the pitch, I think most people were still concerned about the pitching even when they started off all right.
Yeah.
Because it was so apparent that, it was so obvious that the depth is untested
right.
and unproven.
Right.
And that if your starters can't go deep, you're going to be in trouble routinely. I think that most of the starting pitching is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
It's and the bats are going to come back around. Even the guys that aren't necessarily hitting well or at least making contact. I'm at a freakout level. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at a freakout level of 4.
Okay.
Because I teased myself with World Series aspirations, and now I got to remember, okay, wait, well, there's still a lot of unproven here. There's still a lot of still a lot of guys that still need to really genuinely prove themselves.
Seth, as you would say, though, small sample size. They'll be
small
okay.
Small sample size.
They will be okay.
The, if you need anything to make you feel better, the Yankees are 5-6 right now.
Yeah, so that does make me. That's funny. That, you know what, Seth? That did make me feel better. I didn't realize that. They are 5-6 right
no,
now.
No, you're crushing them.
Yeah.
It's disgusting how
yeah,
far behind
yeah,
they are.
Yeah, that's a salve on the wound right there. Yeah. All right, we have Deshaun Watson news. I thought there would be no Deshaun Watson news, but as is the case most often with Deshaun Watson, most of the news drops like after 8:30 at night. So we do have some news from both sides, from both attorneys, that we will get you up to speed on next. All right, here's the latest with the Deshaun Watson litigation. Last night, Tony Busby announced that they are going to refile all, well, at the time, all 22 plaintiffs. Aaron Reese of The Athletic was the first one I saw reporting this, but Tony Busby, and actually Tony Busby put out a statement last night to that effect that I'll...
Did you use Facebook or Instagram?
He got on Facebook a little bit later. I'll tell you about that in just a second. But he put out... The statement that I saw came via email. So he put out a statement last night that... Oh, and I got to find it here. I'm the worst.
Did they send the email to you? Are you on a list or something?
My editor at the Houston Press sent me a copy of it.
Oh, so Busby's only dealing with the print media.
I guess.
He doesn't, us lowly sports radio types. He doesn't, he's not concerned about
it. Yeah, she forwarded to me. Here's what it says. It says this is April 13th. This is last night. We previously attempted to make available to defense counsel the names of the plaintiffs suing Deshaun Watson and intended to do so in due course. We're concerned about the safety of these plaintiffs and asked the Watson team to agree to a protective order where the identities could be used in litigation but not broadcast to the world. Watson team refused our order of compromise, and instead we amend our petitions to name these women. He goes on to say that... that it appears the Watson team thinks that if these courageous women are forced to identify themselves, they would slink away and not pursue this matter. Watson and his counsel badly miscalculated. Due to the bravery of Ashley Solis, she was plaintiff number one, to come forward publicly, and despite the death threats she has experienced, these women are now emboldened. Today, we are amending our petitions to disclose the names of the victims, even those not currently that are subject to any court order. Just to pause there for a second, 14 of the 22 had been mandated by the court if they were going to file a lawsuit to refile with their names. Busby is now saying, you know what? Even though these other women are not under a court order, they're going to refile as well. So continuing with Busby, the message to Watson's team from these brave women is, quote, be careful what you ask for. We would also add that with regard to the new defense of, quote, consent that was proffered at the Friday Watson team press conference, we must say, Mr. Watson may now claim he had consent to do what he did to these victims, but let's be clear. In their minds, he didn't have consent, period, all caps. So that's Busby's statement. What we learned as the night went on last night, Seth, from Rusty Harden, and this is courtesy of Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network, Tom Pelissero, he spoke to Rusty Harden, or at least texted with him, and Rusty Harden clarified, saying, we believe we have names for 20 of the 22 lawsuits. We've got one dismissed, and we're looking for one name. So to sum all this up, it looks like at least one of the 22 plaintiffs has pulled out of her lawsuit, meaning that once they get the name of this other one, the 21 of the 22 remain. And I would say if we're just looking at this quantitatively, that's a win for Busby, because my guess is that part of the strategy of getting the women to give their names out publicly, where the entire public can see their names, was to see how many of them would just withdraw their lawsuits. And if 21 of 22 remain in the hunt for this, then I would say that Busby's got to feel pretty good about those numbers.
Yeah. And we've already kind of seen some of the ugliness of what does happen to the women who have revealed their names publicly. And
I don't know. Death threats in the state.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you could see on, plaintiff number one. And I guess I don't know. I'm still using plaintiff number one and whatnot just because of activity like this. I know that they're going to be or will very shortly be public. But plaintiff number one's public Instagram business account has just been deluged with bad reviews and really insulting stuff, all of that.
Yep.
I guess, do you think that Busby doing this, or at least the way he's presenting, is that he's doing it even though the judge didn't order him to? Did he see the writing on the wall now that they're all consolidated under one judge? I mean, it was going to happen at some point.
Under one judge, who, by the way, was the judge that was overseeing 12 of the names being mandated.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, yes, I think his statement is probably making it look like more of a bravado, bold move than it really is, because I think he knows which way the wind is blowing in all this,
right,
as you were just saying.
And both those guys, I think both attorneys, it feels like one of those situations where both of them are saying things that are probably true, just looking from a different perspective. Where Busby's saying, hey, we offered the names, but Harden was going to have to agree to keep them private.
Right.
Whereas Harden's saying, hey, we asked for the names and we didn't get them, so now we had to do this. So I guess they're posturing and whatnot, but all of this... You know, looking at it in hindsight and thinking about what lawyers had told us was that it was likely that the names were going to be made public at some point.
Right.
It was just a matter of all the legal maneuvering beforehand and jockeying around to get to this point.
Here's what's interesting is that on Facebook last night, and I noticed this because Landry tweeted about it. Right before I was about to go to bed, Landry Locker, our colleague here at Sports Radio 610, tweeted about this. And so I went to Busby's Facebook page, and there it was, and I took a link to it, and I saved it for this morning so I could pull up the post. It's a very brief post, or was, until it was taken down. And all it said was this, Seth. This was after all the statements and the tweets had been flying back and forth about the plaintiffs last night. All it said was, be careful what you ask for, and more coming. That's all it said. It wasn't addressing anybody directly. It wasn't... but. Be careful what you ask for and more coming. That was posted on Busby's public Facebook timeline, and by this morning it was taken down.
And that's where you wonder, okay, how committed is Busby to taking this to trial? And on the other side, how committed is Harden to fighting it all the way to trial versus when do they actually want to settle?
Yeah.
I know in attorneys and a couple of judges that listen to us have told us, I think the majority have said that they think that this will settle out of court.
Yes.
A couple have told me that they think that these guys want to go to court. And I guess ultimately, I mean, ideally, right, the way it's supposed to work is that the 21 plaintiffs remaining are all individuals who can decide for themselves.
Sure.
You know, Busby, I think that as aggressive as Busby is, he does have to listen to his clients. And if some of them want to settle and they do, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of them are going to settle. I got to think that out of 21 clients, at least one of them is going to go to court.
Yeah.
That one of them, especially because Busby, you know, I've heard Busby in that interview say that if he thinks he has a good case, he's going to take it to court.
Yeah.
Like, he just flat out will. Like, he changed his strategy in 2014 or 2015 where he said, you know what, I'm not going to settle anymore. If I think I got a good court, if I've got a good case, I'm going to take it to court because that's where you get the biggest judgments. That's where you get the biggest awards. I don't know if he would consider these good cases or not in terms of just potential award amounts,
right?
You know, or exactly like how much evidence he has that maybe hasn't been presented yet. But there is that in him. If he thinks even one of these is a slam dunk, I think there's a good chance he takes it to court.
I will keep an eye on that throughout the morning. But that's the latest right now, is that the names of all of the plaintiffs who are opting to stay in the lawsuits against Deshaun Watson will be making their names public. That per Tony Busby in a statement last night. So sticking with Deshaun Watson, less than 2 months ago, Deshaun Watson was still the toast of the town. He was still very, very popular here. How bad has it now gotten for Deshaun Watson when it comes to Texan fans? We've got the numbers. We've got the trajectory. It's been quite the journey, and we'll share it with you next. All right, so Seth, for the first time in a long time yesterday, right about now, actually, I think the poll that I put up is closing this very minute, 6:34 a.m.
Can't believe I was here to witness it.
Yeah.
It's like I was that's twice in 12 hours. I mean, first I witnessed Odorizzi's first start for the Astros.
Right.
That was magic. I hope this is just as magical.
Is
this going to make me hate the Crawford boxes?
No.
The same way?
It's got nothing to do with the Crawford boxes. It has everything to do with Deshaun Watson, who, as we know, over the last 48 hours, your relationship with him has been a little bit strained right now.
He's an ex of mine now. Yes. I don't even really like to talk about him too much. I'm moving on in my life.
Yeah. Hang with me for this segment because we're going to talk about your ex here for a little bit. But I put up a poll yesterday.
Oh, no, I'll talk about him on the radio, but I'm talking about like in private. I'm not going to be one of those guys who's like out on a date with another quarterback and be like, talk the whole time about my ex.
Right.
Let's say it had been a different set of occurrences and Justin Fields was here. I'm not going to be out at dinner with Justin Fields and be like, well, so then there was this time, it was in the playoffs and like, I totally thought, oh, Deshaun, what's going on? You're so bad versus the Bills. And then, oh my God, he was just totally so awesome in the second half. It was crazy, Justin. So what do you do? What do you do? Yeah.
Justin's looking at his watch the whole time. I put up a poll yesterday. Oh, that was cool. It just closed literally while I'm looking at it. The bar turned blue of the option that won while I was looking at it. So the poll is something that I had been doing going back to February just to sort of gauge the popularity level or the, you know, how in Texan fans were on Deshaun Watson. And I guess just to go back, I had refrained from doing this for the last month or so because I just didn't think it was really super appropriate to do it as the lawsuits were just piling on and piling on going, hey, what do you think of Deshaun Watson right now? So I think it reached a point this week where things have kind of settled in and, you know, the number of lawsuits has sort of stabilized here. Both sides have now spoken about the situation. So we've got at least got an idea of what the strategy is going to be. And I think we know more now than we did a few weeks ago about both sides. So Seth, I say all this to say that here's the trajectory of what Deshaun Watson's popularity has been. Since February 23rd, that was the first time I put up a poll where I said, are you team Deshaun or are you team Texans front office? On February 23rd, 84% of the people were team Deshaun. And keep in mind, February 23rd, that's like a week after J.J. Watt got released. Everybody's still kind of angry over the season. And Deshaun, and none of this massage stuff had come. I mean, we were still weeks away from Deshaun Watson being a defendant in 22, let alone one lawsuit. So it was 84-16 the first time I ever put that poll up. 3 days later, I put the second one up because that was after the news came out that he had spoken with David Culley. And that David Culley had explained what the vision for the team is to Deshaun. And Deshaun reportedly just summarily kind of dismissed it and said, nope, still moving forward with my trade request. Watson was still winning in a landslide against the Texans front office, but his support diminished. It went from 84% down to 71%. Still a landslide, but 71-29. The next time I did it was about 10 days later, and Deshaun was back at 75-25. But one of the things that I had noticed was I was getting a lot of replies from people saying, hey, how about an option for neither? I'm kind of out on both of these entities. You know, I'm not really that hepped up about the way the Texans have handled their business. And Deshaun's kind of grating on my nerves as well right now with the cryptic rap lyrics and, you know, not speaking publicly. How about an option for neither? So the very next day I put up a poll where I said, are you team Deshaun? Are you team Texans front office? Or are you team neither? Neither won 53% of the vote. The majority of the people were saying, I'm out on both of you. I'm tired of both of you. 53%. Now, of the other 47% that were still taking a side in this, a vast majority were still on the side of Deshaun Watson, 39% to 8%. However, yesterday was the last time that I took the temperature of the fan base, and here's the thing. It's where Deshaun goes from 84% to 71, back to 75, now down to 39. As of yesterday, are you team Deshaun, Team Texans front office or team neither. The final results of the poll, 78% of the people say, I'm out on both of these entities. Like, I'm tired of the way the Texans are doing things, and I'm tired of Deshaun Watson, not just the way that he had handled his business during the trade request, but these lawsuits are obviously impacting my opinion of him. At the very least, him putting himself in this situation and admitting to doing consensual things behind the doors in a massage that are at the very least a little bit creepy. 8% of the people, that's it. That's all that's left. 8% of the people are still team Deshaun Watson. So 92% of the people, 78% saying neither, 14% saying we are team Texans front office. 92% of the people, they are out on Deshaun Watson right now.
Yeah, and obviously there are a whole lot of different factors here. I wondered, because I thought about it yesterday, I'm like, okay, am I doing that thing that Deshaun's attorneys warned me not to? Am I jumping to conclusions or assuming guilt or what have you? It's more complicated than that. It's the fact that Deshaun wanted to be out of Houston before we knew about any of this and didn't want to be the quarterback for the Texans anymore. And even though I blamed the Texans in that situation, once all of this other stuff happens, I mean, I was already on the way, as you remember, Sean, to just looking forward to the draft.
Yes.
I had gotten to the point where I thought, all right, well, look, Deshaun's gone, or he's as good as gone, and there's a chance we might have four first-round picks coming back in return, or three first-round picks, and maybe two this year. Isn't that going to be awesome? Isn't that going to be fun? Let's start thinking about Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, all
right.
That stuff.
Right.
And now all of a sudden that's yanked, too. And it's even regardless of how much blame Deshaun deserves for that particular situation, and I'm saying that genuinely, like, okay, hypothetically he's innocent, hypothetically he's guilty of sin, whatever. Regardless of all that, the fact of the matter remains, once somebody has divorced themselves from you, it's a lot easier to just say, like, well, it's bad luck for him,
yeah,
but I'm moving on.
Yeah.
You know, like in your own personal life, there's nothing more liberating then sometimes you fret and fret and fret over a situation, and then all of a sudden when you leave, you break up with somebody, you quit a job, you just move, whatever you do, it's incredible where once you're on the other side of that decision, how you realize, oh my gosh, why was I ever worried about any of that other stuff? I feel so free. I feel so liberated. And I think that there reached a point sometime in the last few weeks where a lot of people said, all right, well, you know what, Deshaun, you don't want to be the quarterback here anymore. And I might have even supported you in that, but you're not my concern any longer. So why am I going to waste energy? Why am I going to waste energy on you right now when you didn't even want to be here to begin with? And that's where I am with it. And is that cold-hearted? I don't know. I don't really care. It's not my concern anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, if he didn't have a trade request, you know, let's pretend that the relationship was cordial between both sides and that Deshaun didn't want out. You know, the Texans, that they were coming off of the season they're coming off of. But Deshaun, as it seemed like he was in his press conference the day after the season was over, was still in on rebuilding this thing here. But this was all going on right now. Boy, what would we be saying, Seth, if we were, if Deshaun Watson had not demanded a trade, but all this legal entanglements were going on, what would we be saying? I feel like one of the big topics would be, are the Texans going to move on from Deshaun Watson because of all of this?
It would be, the hard thing would be, like, honestly, the moral dilemma you'd be in is you'd have to keep reminding yourself, okay, there's a much larger issue here at stake, which still is. Like, the much larger issue is whatever happened with the various massage therapists. You know, like, that's the bigger issue. But there'd be more of a dilemma because you'd also want, you know, you'd want Deshaun to still be here and be your quarterback and all that. There's the football side of things where just for your pure selfish fan reasons, yeah, you want Deshaun to be all right. And you hope that what turns out was that somehow he wasn't guilty or liable for any of this stuff.
And it's still impacting them from a football standpoint because it's preventing them from trading him right now.
I thought you were saying if he had never said he wanted out.
No. But I'm just saying.
I'm saying now.
Now.
Yeah, okay.
Now, it's still, where you were going with it, I'm going, yeah, you're right. If he hadn't demanded a trade, then we would be sitting here going, okay, one, big picture, do the Texans move on from him? Two, if they're not going to, how does this impact 2021? Is he going to get suspended for 8 games? And now we're taking a season where maybe there was some hope that they get back to the playoffs, and now it's going to be a season where he's going to miss a big chunk of it or not going to play. We would be caring deeply about whether or not he got back on the field in 2021. The only reason from a football standpoint we care about it now is because it's impacting his trade value. It's not impacting the Texans' sees that their on-field product in 2021. It's impacting their ability to move Deshaun Watson because teams
But I guess it is because they can't move him. I mean, so you're going to end up with whomever is your quarterback this year compared to.
My point is, I'm just saying it doesn't as acutely impact the product on the field for the Deshaun Watson. If he were still happy with the Texans, then we would be going, man, how many games is he going to miss? I mean, I was hoping they were going to go 10-6 this year, and now they're probably, if he misses a bunch of the season, they're going to go 5-11 or 4-12 again. That's more acute to me than, you know, because eventually they're going to trade Deshaun. Now they're just delaying the inevitable.
Right, but it also could have been, though, too. I mean, the trade value, but that impacts. I mean, if Justin Fields were the quarterback this year, they're going to probably win more games than they will now.
Probably.
Just because even, I don't, like, if Tyrod Taylor. Well, okay, Tyrod Taylor won't make nearly as many mistakes as a rookie will, but he's not going to have the same potential for electricity as a young Justin Fields would. So, regardless, it's not going to be as entertaining of a product because you don't have your quarterback of the future.
What do you think, just hypothetically, what do you think the favorite would be right now if Deshaun were in good graces with the team, if he hadn't demanded a trade, but knowing everything that we know, and granted, there's still a lot we don't know, not the least of which is what went on in all these massage rooms. But what do you think the favorite would be right now, Seth, in that alternate universe as to whether or not the Texans would be moving on from Deshaun Watson in a world where he hadn't demanded a trade? Like right now on April 13th, knowing all the news that we know, do we think the favorite would be that they're eventually going to trade Deshaun Watson because of all this or that they would weather the storm?
No, I think it would be a matter of it would be a genuine waiting to see how it all played out at this point. Yeah. It really would be. I mean, there's still room. There's so much room for discovery on both sides, and that I think the Texans would do the appropriate thing, which is they would be waiting to see what happened. I think it would probably be kind of like with Tyreek Hill in Kansas City, where he's not suspended, he's not on the commissioner's exempt list, but we're just go ahead and take a break, and you're not going to be at OTAs and all that stuff until everything plays out, and that would extend on into the summer most likely.
Yeah, Ocho just texted in. He's like, "You forgot about one team docuseries." Wasn't there talk of cameras following Deshaun around this offseason? Remember, I think it was on the Rich Eisen show.
Was it Jim Trotter?
Somebody said that he was chronicling. Yes, from that podcast said that, it's all being chronicled. You and I had kind of supposed that that means that Deshaun's got a camera team following him around to put out some sort of docuseries.
Yeah, right.
Are the cameras off now, I guess? I don't know.
I'm guessing. I don't know. Like, I wish the cameras would have followed him around more thoroughly. I don't know. All I know is I've wiped my hands clean of him. Yeah. Like emotionally, I'm done. Yeah. You know, and it's still obviously a very, very important story. But if anything, I've washed my hands clean of him. Yeah, and I'm kind of angry about the fact that, all right, you wanted to leave. I was cool with that, but we were gonna get a bunch of draft picks back in return, and probably the quarterback of the future.
Right.
And now, through whether, you know, even if you're innocent of the serious charges here, you still were operating in such a slipshod manner that you put yourself in this situation.
Yeah.
You know, like at the very least, there's no situation here when all this is over, Sean, where I won't blame Deshaun for a huge chunk of it.
Right.
You know, it's just that's the flat out fact of the matter. There's other quarterbacks in the league that get massages from multiple massage therapists that don't find themselves in this situation.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm going to blame Deshaun for a whole bunch of it. Now, obviously, if he's found liable or guilty of the really serious stuff, then the blame will be even greater. But there's no part of me now that feels like, oh boy, poor Deshaun. I guess I can't complain about Deshaun screwing me out of draft picks. Now I feel like I can.
At the very least, the stuff that he has admitted to being true, that his camp has admitted to being true, is A, just sloppy business, and B, a little bit creepy, right?
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like just booking all this, you know, the way he's gone about finding these folks and then some of this, the consensual stuff they've admitted to. All right, let's go to the phone, 713-572-4610, and start with Pedro. Pedro, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So, again, I'm actually very neutral in this. I'm kind of done with both the Texans and Deshaun. But for me personally, this is something I haven't heard enough of. Wasn't Jack Easterby's job to build relationships with people? If Deshaun's getting 2 to 3 massages outside of team facilities and he's asking for tables, I mean, so I just a general question, what the hell was that guy doing?
Because yeah, that's it's a really good,
the most important guy on the team. I mean, that's just my take. I'll hang up and listen. Great show, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks,
Pedro.
Yeah, no, and it's a really good point. I mean, like, and this is why it's kind of funny when people ask what Jack Easterby is good at, and you don't usually get a clear response, although now it's on the website and it's more defined and serious. But for a long time, you couldn't get a really good – well, we've gotten descriptions of what his job responsibilities are now, but we still don't exactly know what he's good at, other than that he's supposed to be awesome with people, and he's supposed to be a guy that came in and created a certain kind of culture and everything. And now the Texans have what is by many people regarded as – or at least this last year, it was one of the most toxic cultures in the league.
Right.
The very thing that we know he was good at in New England, which was cultivating these relationships, helping guys out, all that stuff, he seems to have been an abject failure in a lot of those areas. So, yes, you're exactly right. I guess the only, like, if I were to give a tepid defense on that for the Texans on that side, it's that he was brought here to be a lot more than just the culture coach. And I think I realize that now there's people out there that still think that Jack Easterby came here as like the character coach or the player development coach. He was not. He came in an executive position from the very, very beginning and was advising Bill O'Brien on top level stuff right from the get go. You know, reportedly a $3 million plus salary. That's not a player development or a character coach. So my tepid defense would be, I don't think he really had all that much of a personal relationship with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson said so himself during the season. And I guess that's not as much his purview as it was perhaps when it was in New England. When it was in New England, it was, hey, how do we be sure nothing like Aaron Hernandez ever happens again?
Yeah.
And that's why they brought Jack Easterby in. When he brought in here, he was the director of team development, which had a lot more to do with overarching overall supervision of various departments. It turned into pretty much every department over time.
Yeah, I think, you know, people who aren't in football or in the building, I think, are quick to say, and I think the Texans have put themselves in this position with a lot of the decision making over the last couple of years, Seth, is that they say, boy, how did the team not know about this? How did the team not know that Deshaun was booking all these massages? As Pedro just said in that call, hell, he was borrowing massage tables. And as I've learned just from doing the show with you and your takes on some of that stuff over the last month or so, is guys getting massages outside of the building is a totally normal thing. Guys borrowing a massage table would actually be a logical thing to do because a lot of guys don't have massage tables at their houses.
Well, just think about the logistics of it, because I think, yeah, people think, because Busby keeps saying this, he's got to stop saying it because it's just wrong. Like, he's flat out wrong on it. This one particular part. Like, teams don't have legions of massage therapists that are just sitting there waiting to massage guys before and after practice. Think of the logistics of 55 guys plus the practice squad on an active roster. You've got, like, if you want to actually have good massage therapists, how do you exactly get those guys in? How do you have them all at the facility for a couple hours before and a couple hours after practice on any given day to give massage? It's just, that's not the way it works. So, yeah, there are massage therapists that they might recommend, and there's some that come in on staff or on certain days of the week and what have you, but it's not to get like a 90-minute massage or anything like that. So Deshaun going – so it's not like the team is on the lookout for, hey, let's be sure none of these guys are going elsewhere for massages.
Right.
Most of them are going elsewhere for massages.
Yeah.
And most of them, by the way, are not being brought up on charges by 20 or are not being sued by 21 different women for improper activity.
Yes, if you were out there trying to police looking for something like this, it would be a whole lot of wasted energy. Like, this is not going on the regular with a lot of players. A week ago, the Astros were fun. The last 4 days, not so much. Do we agree with something that Dusty Baker did in last night's game? We'll dive into it next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.